I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you'd like to become a Patreon sponsor yourself for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, please go to our website, bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, and you'll see the link in the upper right-hand corner, or you can check out the link in the description. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we have one of our favorite guests, Jerry Branum. He is back with us again. It's been about 6 months since I talked to Jerry, where we did our end of the year review that we do every single year. We do that at the beginning of each new year. So the 60th Mr. Olympia is coming up this November. I believe it's November. No, I'm sorry. It's October. It'll be this October in Las Vegas. And the Mr. Olympia, of course, started in 1965. So this will be the 60th Mr. Olympia. Not the 60th anniversary, which would be next year, but the 60th actual Mr. Olympia. So I thought I would bring Jerry on the show and we could talk about the overall history of the Mr. Olympia since 1965. So this was kind of a long discussion. It's actually going to be a couple parts. So on part one today, what we did was we divided the Mr. Olympia into different eras. So today we're going to talk about the Bud Parker era, which was Bud Parker, of course, was the promoter of the Mr. Olympia when it first started in 1965, and he held it at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, and he held it along with the IFBB Mr. America and Mr. Universe, and sometimes they even have the Mr. World in there too. And Bud held it there for 5 years, from 1965 to 1969. So that will be the first era we're going to talk about with Jerry today. And then we're going to talk about the Arnold years, of course, which lasted from 1970 through 1975. And these were the years where Arnold dominated bodybuilding, and he was the winner of the Mr. Olympia. And in those years, the Mr. Olympia traveled around from New York to Paris to Germany and then back to New York and then all the way to Pretoria, South Africa for Arnold's last win before he retired. And then, of course, he came back 5 years later. But this was during the time when Arnold was the reign of Arnold, when he was still the king of bodybuilding. So we got that coming up in a minute. It's always great to talk to Jerry, and we had a really long discussion, so that was awesome. All right, well, welcome back to the show, guys. It's been about a month since we've done a podcast. Really couldn't find any guests, and I've been very busy. Been working on my online coaching business. If you follow my YouTube channel, I'm sure you've seen I've brought out about 5 videos over the last month about nutrition and training, and so I've been working really hard on that. Also, I've been working on the History of Bodybuilding book. I've been talking about this for years, and I was actually kind of writing it, but I was just going over all the different contests from year to year, which took a lot of time. So now I'm actually starting the book over and starting from the very beginning, the History of Bodybuilding, and I'm working on that every day. So I'm planning to hopefully get that finished kind of toward the end of the year. Maybe we could have a 2025 release for that. I talked to Rick Newcomb, who runs Creators Publishing. I interviewed Rick a couple of years ago on the podcast. You may remember that. And Rick now has his own publishing company with his son in Hermosa Beach, California. So he said he's interested in publishing it. So we'll see what happens with that. But I got to write it first. So I've been working on that, and that's been taking a lot of time. So, but as far as the podcast goes, I've been trying to get guests, but unfortunately just haven't been able to hook up with anybody. Tim Belknap was showing interest and being on the show, and then he just kind of blew me off, and he said he was too busy. Of course, I've been bugging Phil Hill forever for literally like 2 years, and he hasn't committed yet. And Rick Wayne said he wants to do one, so we might get Rick pretty soon. I just have to get him on a weekend when he doesn't have any plans or he's not busy. Sometimes he has guests over at his house. But I have talked to Rick, so Rick is definitely interested. So I think he'll be coming back for another interview. And believe it or not, it's been 2 years already since we did our last interview with Rick, so Rick will be coming back soon, hopefully. So keep your fingers crossed, guys. But until then, we do have these shows with Jerry coming up. And we did celebrate our 7th anniversary of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We did our first show on July 3rd, 2017. So it's been 7 years now. I've interviewed lots and lots of guests. I think we've had over 300 shows If you guys are new to the podcast or you want to listen to some of the old shows, just go to our website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and then click on the podcast link, and you'll see all the podcasts that I've done. So you can check that out. Some of them are on YouTube, but a lot of them aren't. So if you just want to listen to the audio portion, I've got all of them right there on the website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com. I just had the Tampa Pro in Tampa this weekend, so I went and checked that out. Nice show. Tim Gardner and his wife, Eileen, this was their 17th year promoting the show. So Tim does a great job promoting bodybuilding. They gave Ronnie Coleman the Ben Weider Lifetime Achievement Award. So Ronnie was there. So that was great to see him. He gave a really long speech. So that was really cool. I got to see Derek Lunsford, the current Mr. Olympia. He was there and he is looking huge. I took a picture with him. He made my arms look like they were 10 inches. So Derek is looking really good going into the Mr. Olympia again this year. He's hoping to make it two in a row. So we'll see what happens with that. I did get a couple emails since we were gone. This one was from Tim. He said, "Hey, John, I've been a listener for a long time. Every show is great. The reason for the email is to tell you I just bought your MP6 book. I thought I'd give it a try. At the age of almost 70, I hope it'll do me some good. I am not a beginner. I competed 2 years ago, and I thought I was done, but I'm starting to get the itch again. Hopefully this program will do me some good. If there's anything I should do, please let me know. My diet isn't too bad. A lot of protein, fasted cardio every morning. Thanks, your fan, Tim Christ." All right, Tim, still going strong at 70, almost 70. So I hope the book helps you, Tim. If you got any questions on it, you can shoot me an email anytime. Basically, the MP6 book is a book I wrote several years ago about training cycles. And instead of just trying to train hard all the time, this book divides your training into cycles. They're 6-week cycles. That's why we call them MP6. One is for mass, and then the other one is for power. So the power cycle has you using a little bit heavier weights, maybe 6 to 8 reps, even maybe 4 to 6 reps. And you basically just cycle the weights each week using a weight you can handle. And it slowly builds up your strength. And then after that cycle is over, you go over to a mass cycle, which is another 6 weeks. And then that one is using basically the same workout, but you're just using different weights. And you should be able to be a little bit stronger after using the power cycle for 6 weeks. And then after that's over, you do a deload week where you rest for a week and then you start the cycle over again. So my book, The MP6 Workout, details how to do that. So if you're interested in buying that book, you can get it on Amazon or you can get it on my website, johnhansonfitness.com. And I think we also sell it on the Bodybuilding Legends Show website as well. I have all my books and videos on there as well. So good luck, Tim. I also got another email here from Brad. Brad says, "I'm really disappointed with your podcast, unfortunately. I can't remember the last time you actually had a guest, and the magazine readings are so overdone. Seems like maybe you have exhausted all the possible guests, but simply no one wants to participate. Additionally, podcast releases are so sporadic and some take up to nearly a month. Don't expect you to read this email during your podcast, but after many years of being a loyal listener, I no longer wish to be." All right, Brad Clem, I guess you won't hear this email being read because he's no longer listening to the podcast. But yeah, it has been tough the last month, unfortunately, really. It's been very hard to get people. And like I said, I'm doing other things as well. So I'm trying. We did get Bill St. John. I've actually connected with Bill St. John. Bill was in the Mr. America back in the 70s. He took third place to Casey and Pete Kromkowski in 1971. And I believe Bill was second at the Mr. USA that year to Steve Mihalik. So Bill had a really good career in the AAU, and Bill did connect with me, but we couldn't get his sound to work. So I don't know if there was something he was doing wrong, but we just couldn't get that to work. So unfortunately, I haven't been able to connect with Bill, but Bill wants to do the interview. We just got to figure out his technical problems. So maybe hopefully we can get that coming up soon. Maybe he can get one of his grandkids to help him out with that and figure out what the problem is. So sorry, Brad is disappointed, but yeah, I'm doing my best, Brad. We've done lots of interviews over the last 7 years, and I have pretty much hit everybody. And some of these guys, like I said, they just don't want to do it. I mean, I'm not kidding when I say that I probably contacted these guys 50 times. I'm not even exaggerating. And most of the time, they won't even respond. So I don't know. I don't know why they wouldn't want to talk about their bodybuilding career, but I guess they don't. So I'll just keep trying and we'll see what happens. And I guess Brad didn't like the magazine readings either. So, but at least we got Jerry on this week, one of our favorite guests. And then we should have Rick Wayne on. And just contacted John Brown, too. John Brown just started his own podcast. I think it's called Black Coffee. and it's on YouTube. And he just recently interviewed Sean Ray, which was a really good interview if you guys are looking to watch something. But John was talking about how he's not interviewed too often. And I sent him a text and I said, you know, I interviewed you years ago, but I'd like to have you back on the show. Because if you know, John was a great bodybuilder and was also a great coach. He coached Sean Ray. He coached Vince Taylor. He coached Melvin Anthony. He coached lots of people. He's very motivational. And his sons, two of his sons are now playing in the NFL. He has three sons. I'm not sure what the third son is doing, but two of them are playing in the NFL. And one of them is playing, I believe, for Detroit. And he just signed a huge contract. He's one of the superstars on the team. So John definitely knows what he's doing when it comes to coaching and motivating. So I would love to have him back on the show. So I'll try reaching out to him again because it sounds like he's interested in being interviewed. All right, guys. So that's all we've got for the opening. So here's our interview with Jerry Branum. And in this part of the interview, part one, we're going to talk about, as I mentioned, the Bud Parker years, which was the Mr. Olympia from 1965 to 1969. And then we'll also talk about the Arnold years, which goes from 1970 to 1975. Here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have my good friend Jerry Branum here. And Jerry, we're going to talk about the Mr. Olympia because this is the year where they're going to have the 60th Mr. Olympia this year in 2024. The contest started in 1965.
Right.
So it's got a huge history. Of course, it's now recognized as the biggest contest in bodybuilding. All the other competitions that were big back in the 60s are gone, like the Mr. America and the Mr. Universe. So now the Mr. Olympia is the big dog. It's got a great history, and you were actually at some of the very early contests. So I thought we could go back in time and kind of take it by era, and just kind of quickly mention the highlights of each era and just give a little bit of a history for the Mr. Olympia for our listeners.
That sounds great.
Before we get to the end of the podcast, I want to mention your newsletter, Jerry, because we always mention it at the end. So I'd like to mention at the beginning.
It's a good idea in case people tune in.
Yeah.
I don't know why they would, but anyway. Yeah, it's Applied Metabolics. It's www.appliedmetabolics.com. And I cover stuff of huge interest to anybody involved in bodybuilding and fitness, nutrition, exercise science. And, you know, there's a lot of older people over 40 that are interested in maintaining their health and possibly extending longevity. So I talk about anti-aging. I cover women's health and fitness. I cover more topics in Applied Metabolics than any of the digital newsletter. You know, it's about 30 to 45 pages every month. No ads. I'm not associated with any supplement company. And I think it's a huge asset to anybody who really wants to know the nuances and, let's say, the so-called deep dive into nutrition and exercise. I don't talk about, you know, this guy's arm routine or that. I'll leave that for the online videos. I mean, that has a usefulness. I used to write that stuff when I wrote for the magazine.
Yeah.
But this is for people, let's say, more of a thinking type of person that really wants to know how things work, the deep mechanics, and also to understand what could go wrong in their training, you know, what could go wrong with their nutrition so they could put themselves on the right road. It's a fantastic usefulness for, let's say, personal trainers or anybody who wants to get in shape. You don't have to be a competitive bodybuilder. I have articles in there about general health that have nothing to do with bodybuilding. I cover hormonal therapy. I do talk about medical studies related to, let's say, steroids and growth hormone. As a matter of fact, in the current issue, which is, this is August issue, I have a gigantic article on growth hormone, which is, now that's an interesting thing because, as you know, growth hormones is of tremendous interest, not only to bodybuilders and athletes, but also to people in the anti-aging crowd.
Yeah.
Because growth hormone has the reputation of being a fountain of youth hormone. So what I do in this article is I explain everything you want. I mean, literally everything you want. It's like an ebook length article. The article itself is like 30 pages, you know?
What I like about it too, Jerry, is usually you have articles like from research. And
yeah,
then you explain the research articles. Yeah.
I put it in plain English.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a science dictionary. That's a problem with some of these other digital newsletters because they have great information. It's not that their information is inaccurate, but a lot of the guys who write this are, let's say, doctoral graduates and this and that, and they write in an academic passive style, and they use these technical words where if you don't have a scientific background, you know, you don't know what the hell, and they might as well be writing in Spanish or Egyptian.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I learned when I first started writing that one of the tenets of writing, one of the important aspects of writing, and I know that as a writer, you know this is true too. If you can't communicate with the reader, in other words, if they don't understand what you're saying, you're wasting your time.
Yeah.
In other words, because first of all, they're going to stop reading. If you try and show how smart you are by, you know, writing all these technical terms with no explanation, they're going to just, I'm done. And they, you know, they will stop reading.
Yeah.
Because I've actually come across that myself. And I'm into science. I've come across articles that were written so technically that I couldn't get past the first paragraph and I stopped reading.
Yeah.
So, and this is a guy who actually understands that stuff.
Yeah.
I can imagine somebody who has no scientific background. So again, it's a huge, it's not expensive at all, 33 cents a day. And like I say, I always say in my own videos, I always point out that I absolutely guarantee no matter what your level of knowledge or education, you'll learn something in every issue. I know that because I learned something when I researched.
Right.
I mean, when I wrote this growth hormone, I mean, I've been reading about growth hormone for what, 30 years at least?
Yeah.
And doing the research, I learned quite a bit of information about growth hormone that I didn't know myself. So anybody has, that's just one example. There's a ton of other things I talk about, like all these weight loss drugs, all that stuff. It's all in there. So it's a tremendous tool for anybody.
Yeah. So go to appliedmetabolics.com, and I'll have the link below so they can go directly to it. And
also, I just want to quickly add that anyone who subscribes, if they send me an email, I'll send them an invitation to join. I have a private Facebook page for each day I post new information every day on exercise, general health, and medicine. And, you know, subscribers, if they want to email me a short question about anything they read or that's curious about nutrition or exercise, I'll answer them as appreciation for their subscription.
Yeah.
That's kind of a bonus. I don't know how many people do that. I do it for my subscribers. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about the Mr. Olympia. Let's go back to, I thought we could separate it, like I said, by eras.
Sure.
So I thought we would start with the Bud Parker era. Now, Bud Parker was the guy who was the promoter of the Mr. Olympia when it started.
Right.
And he held the Mr. Olympia from 1965 to 1969 at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. So the first 4 years, right?
Right.
5 years that Mr. Olympia was held at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. And it was usually held with the IFBB Mr. America, the Mr. Universe, and the Mr. World. So sometimes they would have all four of these big IFBB contests in one night.
Right.
And they have a big spectacle show. So now, Jerry, you were there as a teenager living in Brooklyn. And
right.
I think you went to, was it 65 or 66?
66.
66, the second one.
I don't know why I wasn't at the 65. I don't remember, but I'll never forget the 66, Mr.
Yeah.
another young man in the who was a year younger than me, who was in that same audience, was a guy named Lou Ferrigno.
Right.
And also, I could be wrong about this, but I believe Mike Mentzer told me.
I was going to mention that. Yeah, Mike Mentzer was there too. Yeah.
All of us were there. We all, and the funny thing is, I knew Lou, but I didn't know Mike back then.
Yeah.
But we became friends later on. We didn't know, we all happened to be in the auditorium.
I think Mike was from Pennsylvania.
Right, Pennsylvania. Yeah,
yeah,
that's right. Yeah, yeah. And he was there, and it was a fan. I was how old was I? I was 16 years old, and I'd seen of course they only had the magazines back then. They didn't have any internet.
Right.
Nobody even thought about the, there wasn't even anyone's mind, you know?
Right.
I mean, you got all your information and they had the pictures and, you know, living on the East Coast, maybe you, I know you're from Chicago or something, but I don't know how you felt when you were, you were a kid, but to me, the West Coast guys would be the equivalent of movie stars to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you see these guys with the tans and, you'd see the photos of them running along the beach with the bikini girl. I mean, the thought of actually seeing them in person was, I can't even put words, it was awe-inspiring to me.
Yeah.
And especially the big star that I really wanted was two of them, Dave Draper and Larry Scott. And I knew they'd both be competing that night. Draper was in which one did he compete in the 60s?
The Universe.
In the Universe. And I remember he had Bill Pearl's trunks on.
Yeah.
Had these, like, what is it? How do you
blue metallic, right?
Blue Metallic, exactly.
Yeah.
And Dave told me later on, I said, Dave, those look like Bill Pearl's trunk. He says they were. And the funny thing was, just a side note, I don't mean to go off on a tangent. When I competed in one of the Muscle Beach shows, the best photo of me ever taken as a bodybuilder was a side tricep shot. You might have seen it on my Facebook. That was taken by Artie Zella. And the trunks I'm wearing were Arnold Schwarzenegger's trunks.
Yeah, I remember you mentioned that before, those white ones, right?
Yeah, that was Arnold's trunk. I think he gave them. I don't remember how I got it, but those are Arnold's trunks.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, it was, you know, I mean, it was just a fantastic contest. I mean, it was just tremendous excitement. And I strongly doubt, John, that I haven't been to an Olympian in years. I mean, you have, but I don't know if the level of excitement in the audience today could possibly equal what I witnessed that night in 1966. It was, the whole audience was on their feet screaming. I mean, the New York crowd is crazy anyway, but this was unbelievable. I mean, it was fantastic. I'll never forget that.
You know? Why do you think the audience was so crazy at the? Because I've heard that from so many people that they felt like they said the roof was going to blow off. They're loud, you know, the people were so loud. I mean, you've been to other contests around that time when you were younger. They didn't have that kind of level of excitement.
There was nothing like that. I think a lot of it had to do with the aura of these West Coast guys. It was not only me that felt that these guys were like movie stars. It was the whole crowd.
Yeah.
I mean, these were literally legends in their own time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like Larry Scott, of course, was the winner that year. And I remember, you know, Bud Park, as you say, was the MC. Bud Park was a little short guy, about 5'5".
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't know this, but Bud Parker also published a gay bodybuilding magazine.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that, but, you know, that's a little factoid for you, you know. But, you know, he was pretty well-spoken, and I remember him, and you know, he took the mic. Everybody was waiting for Larry Scott. And I think, what, Sergio? Did Sergio compete that year in 66?
Yeah, Sergio, Chuck Sipes.
Chuck Sipes, and,
one was that?
Who was the other guy? I know there was one more, right? Oh, Harold Poole,
yeah, yeah.
Now, all these guys, you have to understand, John, generate excitement. I mean, Sergio, believe it or not, even though as fantastic as he was and later became,
yeah,
he probably was the least popular of all those guys that night.
I think he was fourth out of the four guys.
He was fourth, yeah. I mean, they clapped and they this and that, but it was more subdued.
Okay.
Chuck Sipes drew a lot of applause and screaming and yelling. You know, he had this very powerful physique, those great abs and stuff.
Yeah.
And he had these iron, what does it go, these slabs of pectoral muscle on him, you know, posed in a very powerful way and this and that, you know. But the two most popular guys that year by far were Harold Poole and Larry Scott. Now, Harold Poole was a hometown guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I trained in the same gym as him. I knew Harold very well. He was a friend of mine, you know. And then, you know, but Harold posed. He got, people standing on, hey, Harold, you know, they're all yelling. And then Bud Parker, you know, there was like almost like a brief, it seemed like there was a brief lapse of time where the whole auditorium got silent. It was really true. I wish somebody could have put this on with sound on video.
Yeah, on sound, yeah.
Because everybody knew who was coming next. This was the king, Larry Scott.
Yeah.
And you know, the light was on the stage and Bud Parker, and from California, Larry Scott, you know, last year, the current Mr. Olympia, I don't remember exactly how he said it.
Yeah.
And you know, and there's lights on the stage and, you know, and nothing's happening. It's just the lights on the stage. 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes go by. And, you know, the audience is silent. Where is he? You know, suddenly you see a foot emerge from the left side of the stage, slowly sauntering across the stage. Now the light hit him, you know, from above. Now, Larry had blonde hair. Now, I don't know whether he dyed his hair or whether it's the effect of the light, but the one thing I still remember is his hair looked platinum.
Yeah.
It looked platinum when he stepped on stage. And as soon as you could see his physique, that's when all hell broke loose. The audience, everybody was on their feet, screaming, yelling. Oh, I was yelling myself, you know. I mean,
yeah.
And he just looked straight ahead, walked to the posing platform, and started posing. I mean, and I swear, it seemed like 20 minutes went by. I don't remember. Probably was a lot less time than that. But in my mind, they were screaming, John, and yelling on their feet the whole time. And as I told Larry himself in a phone conversation years later, I said, you know, Larry, I have never, in all the contests I've attended, I've never seen the reception that you got that night in 1966. He says, yeah, it was really something, wasn't it? I said, yeah. I said, how did you feel? He says, Larry was kind of a low-key guy, you know.
Yeah.
He had a lot of humility. He didn't like to brag. He said, oh, it really made me feel good, but I was kind of concentrating on my posing. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
That was a close contest. A lot of people who attended believe that Harold should have won. But, you know, Larry was in peak shape, and he had those, oh, my God, the shoulders and arms were back then, nobody could come close to his shoulder and arm. He still, to me, to this day, has the best bicep-tricep balance almost of all time. I mean, it was just the perfect balance between his bicep. And, of course, he had those great delts. But, you know, the thing is, he had a lot of weak points. You know, he didn't have wide lats. His thighs were there, but they were mediocre. Fairly decent calves. Now, here's the interesting part. The back developed that Larry showed that night, he wouldn't have placed in the current Mr. He wouldn't have placed in the top 10. In other words, and as we talked about in the past, Larry did not do any direct back. He didn't do like a double arm back shot. He didn't do a lat spread from the back. Remember, in those days, they didn't have mandatory poses.
Right.
So he got away with that. What he would do, because he knew he had the best arms and shoulders in the world, he would do twisting shots. You know, he'd go like this, where you do that shot, you can make your back look wider than it really is.
Yeah.
Not only that, but his arms and shoulders were so fantastic that you didn't even look at his back. You didn't even look at his back. And that's why he won. But see, now Harold, in contrast, he had a complete physique. He could do a double arm back, he could do a lat spread. He was a little harder. He was in harder shape than Larry.
Yeah.
And Larry had that aura going for him. When the judges, I could just imagine the judges sitting there watching him get this 20-minute ovation.
Yeah.
They were thinking, if we give it to Harold Poole, we'll never get out of here alive.
Right.
So Harold really had no chance of winning, you know. So,
did they have a pose down back then, Jerry?
I don't remember there being a pose down.
Okay. Because I've seen pictures of all four of them up there. I was wondering if they were doing a pose down, that's just when they were giving the awards out. I wasn't.
I know that Harold was on stage the same time.
Yeah.
When they were announcing the placings, all of them were on stage.
Okay. So maybe that was it.
That might have been what you call a slight pose down there, you know.
Because I read stories. I heard the pose down started with Arnold and Sergio, like in 70, you know.
Yeah. I think that if there was any pose down, it would have occurred when all of them were on stage, when they were going to announce the winners, you know.
Yeah.
Sergio was on the end and Chuck Sipes and Harold was standing right next to Larry.
I've also read stories that I think it was the next year when Sergio won the first time, and it was really close between him and Harold Poole again.
Yeah.
Harold was second again that year. And I heard the judges actually went backstage, and they asked to see them close up, like backstage.
Wow.
Not on stage, but backstage. So I thought that was interesting, yeah.
You know that. That's it. That is interesting.
So Larry won the first 2 years in 65 and 66, and then Sergio won the next 3 years. Those were the 3 years that Sergio won, and those were all at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. I read an article, too, I think it was by Rick Wayne, where he said Bud Parker was like a theater guy, and his dream was to be in the theater and put on these big stage shows, you know, and he never did that. So he tried to do the same thing with his show at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, where he brought in, like, singing acts, and he brought in like arm wrestling stuff, and like Chuck Sipes would do strongman stuff. It was like, it was a night full of entertainment, right? The whole night.
Oh yeah. I remember they had I don't know if it was that year, but in the early years of the Olympia, they had this hand balancing guys.
Yeah.
I can't remember. One of them, they were all bodybuilders. One of them was in pretty big, the bigger guy, the guy who was on the bottom, kind of held the smaller guy, put him on his shoulder, did all this stuff. It was very popular with the crowd. They loved it.
I heard that group. I heard they were on Johnny Carson.
Yeah, they were. They were pretty big for a while. And, you know, I mean, that was the era of variety acts.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, that stuff, like, I mean, John Frisch did it at his show. I mean, you look at a lot of them took their lead from, let's say, a popular TV show on Sunday night was Ed Sullivan. Right? So it was like a really huge TV show, and his whole show was different types of acts.
Yeah.
He had puppeteers, he had dancers, he had singers. He brought over the Beatles in 1964.
Yeah.
And a lot of these, I think Bud Parker figured that, well, that's entertainment. That's what people want. They want to see not just the bodybuilders, but they wanted to, maybe in between, keep their interest up by showing all these different variety. It wasn't really a bad idea.
Yeah.
Years later, Vince McMahon, the wrestling guy, tried to take it a step further with the WBF by having the guys have take a kind of a cartoonish persona.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That fell flat. It just didn't work.
Yeah.
Because there was no real entertainment there,
Yeah. Yeah. That's what was in style back then, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the style. Yeah.
And they also had kind of like bikini contests. So it was almost like the beginning of what they have now with bikini contests. They had it all the way back in the 1960s.
Yeah, they had something called the Miss Americana.
Yeah.
In fact, a friend
it's basically
of
like a cheesecake type beauty.
Yeah,
pageant,
yeah. Right? Yeah. A cheesecake. A friend of mine's, good friend of mine, his sister-in-law was one of the first winners, I remember, Italian girl from Brooklyn.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she won one of the first Miss Americanas. And as you said, these were not bodybuilders. They were just, kind of sexy women.
Yeah.
They had what you might call the Marilyn Monroe type bodies.
Yeah.
Big hips and large breasts. And, they didn't look like they ever touched a weight. They didn't even look like they exercised, but they were attractive, sexy women. There's no doubt about it.
So, how did the crowd react to that? Were they into that or were they bring on the bodybuilders?
Oh no, the crowd loved the guy. The guy, the women in the audience were kind of silent.
Yeah.
The guys were going crazy.
Yeah.
And they were yelling out some pretty lewd things. I mean, I won't repeat what they said, spread your legs, blah, 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 all this
stuff.
Oh,
okay.
But they enjoyed it because the girls were good looking women, if I remember. They were, I remember looking at some of them and said, gee, I'd like to have her as my girlfriend. And I was like 60 years old. These women were all older than me,
Yeah.
But they were really sexy, these girls. Good looking girls. Yeah.
Yeah, those had to be great years because, like you said, the audience was so passionate about it and the atmosphere had to be amazing.
Yeah. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Frank's wife,
Christine
won one of those Miss Americana contests, didn't she?
I believe it was in 67, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was when, let's see, who won it then? Was that Don Howarth winning?
Don Howarth, yeah. And Frank was mad because he didn't win. He wanted to be up there with Christine,
Yeah, right.
I guess he won his class, but then he lost the overall to Don Howarth.
Yeah. And then she went over with him when he competed in the NABBA Universe.
And they both won then. Yeah.
We got this back there, yeah.
Yeah, they had one at the NABBA Universe too. Same thing, right? Same kind of thing.
And they cashed in on it by writing a book together. Remember the book where they were like exercising together in
the
room? They were one of the original fitness couples.
Now, women really didn't work out back then, right? They didn't work out with weights. No.
No, they were
gyms were all men.
All men, and the women were terrified. I remember trying to talk women into working out back then. And they had this idea, John, if they lifted a 2-pound bar, dumbbell,
get muscles.
That they would get, because I was, I had the big, I still had fairly big arms. I said, oh, no, I don't want arms like you.
Yeah.
I said, you're not going to get arms like me. I didn't know why women could get couldn't get big muscles back then. Years later, I learned there was the hormonal factors, the bone structure and all that.
Yeah.
I said, it's not going to happen. I said, because I was aware that even back then, certain female athletes, not bodybuilders, were already using weight training, for their athletic career. Some track and field girls and stuff, especially the field athletes, like shot putters and javelin, they were actually already lifting weights. And if you look at photos of them, none of them look, except for these German girls and the Russian. But that's we don't want to talk about oral. What's it called? Tarabla? I can't remember that. Can't remember the drug they were using. Anyway. But the American female athletes were lifting weights, but they definitely looked like women.
Yeah.
They looked athletic, but, kind of like the look that maybe the early female Miss Olympias had, like Rachel.
Yeah.
Where they looked athletic and they looked semi-muscular, but you wouldn't call them, like, huge.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Did you ever see Sergio win any of those shows at the Brooklyn Academy?
Oh, I wasn't in any of them.
Okay.
Let me think. He first won in 68, was it? Or 67?
67.
I don't remember why I wasn't there in 67, but by 68, when he won, I was already in California.
Okay, that's right. Yeah.
In fact, I told you the story of the Iron Man came out about 2 months or 3 months after he won, and they had a feature on Sergio winning the Olympia, and I was in the gym with Arnold, who had just arrived in the United States.
Yeah.
And I remember the picture of Sergio on the top of the article was his arms out like this, you know,
yeah.
Remember the giant lats and so. And I showed it to Arnold, and Arnold said, "Remember I told this story?" He says, "Unbelievable, fantastic." What he said to me was kind of amazing. He says, "Nobody could ever beat this guy." Arnold said that. I should remind him that next time I see him.
Right, you know, right.
This was it, like a year later or a year or two later, he was competing. A
couple years later, right? Yeah.
He was in awe of Sergio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sergio had to be something to see back then. His proportions and everything. There was nobody like him.
Oh, he was still probably easily one of the most genetically gifted bodybuilders of all time.
Right.
I mean, you know, when you think about, I talked to his son Sergio about that. I mean, the man never did anything right.
Yeah.
I mean, he used to drink like a dozen bottles of Coca-Cola, and he ate every one. He had this little tiny waist. And even his training was wrong. He did his poor form in his movements, overtrained. I mean, you know, and yet look at him. I mean, could you imagine? Plus, of course, there's the drug factor. I mean, I'm sure that Sergio took steroids and drugs, but nothing like that. It scares me of what this guy would have looked like if he trained properly, followed a good nutrition program, and took the drugs that the guys today had. I think if he was still young and came back somehow today, he would destroy every one of these guys. Just because he would be a difference. It would be a guy who looked not unhuman. He wouldn't even look like a human. He'd be so human.
I know.
Just imagine Sergio with a ripped, defined physique.
Right.
Scary.
I mean, structure and that small waist.
Unbelievable. His legs would be bigger. Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Scary to think about. Yeah.
When you think about how it was in the 60s, I mean, you're right. They didn't really know how to diet. They didn't know much about nutrition. They didn't know how to train, you know.
No, it was all flying blind. They didn't really know. Like I say, it was an era of overtraining and, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing that the guys looked as good as he did.
Yeah.
They did things that were really wrong, but it just goes to show you the powerful effect of genetics.
Oh, yeah. Body. Yeah.
I mean, by doing things that were terrible as far as nutrition and exercise.
And hard work. I mean, he did work hard.
Yeah, that's, you can't.
Very hard worker. Yeah.
You can't take it away. The guys years ago in that 67, they worked their asses off, John.
Yeah.
No cell phones. There was no screwing around. I mean, in between shows in the offseason, they would kibitz a little bit in the gym and joke around. And maybe, you know, train a little bit less intensely. But let me tell you, three, 4 months before a show, these guys were all business.
Yeah.
They were focused. It was a whole – I don't see any of that today. I mean, I'm sure that exists. But, you know, I don't see any many competitive bodybuilders at all. But, you know, back then it was very, very serious.
Sergio had a full-time job. He was he worked in a factory, and I think he was a butcher, right?
Yeah.
He worked all day. And then they'd go into the gym, and there was no air conditioning back then. So he trained in the Duncan YMCA in the basement. It had to be super hot in there, you know.
Yeah. I mean, here's a guy. I remember reading where he said he put in sometimes 9-10 hour days.
Yeah. And then go right to the gym for 3 hours.
The drive there is incredible when you think about it.
Yeah.
When I first met him, I think it might have been that 66 show. I went backstage because he was, you know, he was getting a lot of publicity. Remember, he had come from Cuba as an Olympic defected from Cuba. He was an Olympic lifter, and, you know, he had competed in the AU, and he was pretty well, you know, he was getting a lot of play in the magazines. So I went backstage, you know the story.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to get his autograph. But the reason I'm mentioning this again, because he was wearing his butcher's robe.
He used to do that to pump up, right?
yeah, and it had blood all over it. It looked like he just...
Yeah.
And when he told me to get the fuck out of my face, I looked at the robe with the blood all over it, and I looked at his face had like scars on it when you see him up close.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm not going to mess with this guy.
You're going to be another victim.
Yeah. Even though I was like a Brooklyn tough guy, whatever you want to call it, my first impulse would say, well, fuck you too. But I wasn't about to say that with this guy.
Right.
<You know? laughs>
And just for the people who weren't around back then, if we go back over the list of competitors, this is why they would always hold the Olympia with the Mr. America, the Mr. World, the Mr. Universe, because the Olympia was, it, when it just started, they only had three guys in the first one. They had four guys in the second one. I think they had four guys in the third one. When Sergio won the second time in 68, he had nobody. Nobody would go up against him.
Yeah.
Now that's, and then 69, I think there was three guys. Yeah.
I mean, you think about, though, that's a testimony to the awe that Sergio inspired.
Right.
69 that he competed alone, was that 69?
68, the 68. Second one.
Yeah. The fact that you had to remember, you had a lot of great bodybuilders at that. Chuck Sipes was still on.
Well, Chuck Sipes, I think, was there. I think he won the Mr. World that year.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So he was there. He could have did it.
Yeah. You could have had several top bodybuilders.
I think Dave Draper was there, too. I think he could have did it.
Right. Several. I'm sure there were several top caliber bodybuilders
that
could have gone. I mean, they would have been welcome to compete in the Olympia.
Right.
But they looked at Sergio. They wanted no part of it. I mean, he was like literally considered indomitable. You forget it. Nobody's going to beat this guy. So why bother?
Right.
I mean, Arnold didn't even want to compete against nobody.
Yeah.
I mean, has that ever happened? I mean, think Arnold. Didn't Arnold compete once by himself?
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you look at the pictures of Sergio back then, too, I think, you know, I think he just kept getting bigger throughout his career. You know, when he started. Probably when you saw him in 66, he wasn't nearly as big as he got.
He was actually relatively – in fact, I remember now I think about it, standing relaxed on the side of the stage of that 66. He was no big – I mean, Chuck Sipes looked actually bigger than him.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Chuck Sipes was small, you know, but Sergio looked – standing relaxed. I mean, he looked great. Don't think he's had the small waist and the great legs, all that.
Yeah.
But he looked nothing like he did later on. He was – a quarter of the size he was later on.
Yeah, I saw a picture of him and Draper on stage at the same time, and Draper looked bigger, too.
Draper did look bigger, for sure. Yeah. Now, he definitely gained a lot of size. You know,
but I think when that period when he was winning, those 3 years when he was winning, he started putting on size, but he still had the cuts. He still had the muscularity. Right. And I think that had to be his best. That's when he beat Arnold in 69, when he had the size, but he wasn't smooth. He was still cut.
Yeah. I still think, and I think we talked about this also, I think he reached his peak. Was it the 73 one in Essen, Germany? Was that 73?
72.
That's, to me, was the best Sergio that ever appeared.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And, you know, again, I hate to talk about a contest that I wasn't at, but judging by the many photos I've seen and the eyewitness accounts of people that did compete, other than Franco, you know, all of, like Frank saying, all the other guys told me that Sergio was a clear winner that night.
Yeah.
It's a shame. You know, he should have won that Mr. Olympia.
But, yeah, it would have been more exciting if he would have, too.
It would have. You're right.
So, as I mentioned, that was it was at the Brooklyn Academy of Music from 65 to 69. And then they wouldn't let them hold the contest there anymore because the bodybuilders were getting oil on the curtains. Really? So it would be crazy back then with all the bodybuilders backstage and using all that baby oil, you know.
Oh, hey, yeah, listen, when I went backstage, look, I don't remember how I got back there. When I went backstage at 66 to try and, you know, get Sergio's autograph.
Yeah.
I remember I almost slipped on the floor. There was like oil everywhere.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, they destroyed that. And I think they did the same thing to that. You know, that theater where they used to hold the Night of the Champions in New York.
The Beacon Theater.
I think the same thing happened there.
Yeah.
They banned them from that theater because the same thing. They ruined the curtains and all that stuff.
Right.
You know? That's true.
So let's go to the next era, which I guess we'll call the Arnold years, the Arnold era. Right. So this was from 1970 to 1975, and this is when Arnold won six Mr. Olympias in a row. So the first year in 1970, it was also held in New York, but like I said, they couldn't hold it at the Brooklyn Academy, so they held it at the Town Hall in New York City.
Right.
And this is where Arnold first beat Sergio, and that was a big contest, too. You didn't see that one either, right? You were in California.
I was in California, yeah. If I had been in New York, I definitely would have attended that, for sure. Yeah,
they said it could have really gone either way. Sergio was big, but he was too smooth, but he was really big. And he had won, you know, the previous three.
Yeah.
But Arnold was really at his best that year compared to 69. You know, he was bigger, he was more cut. And then he had just beaten Sergio in Columbus, Ohio, like 2 weeks earlier. And, you know, the story was he told Sergio they all went out to dinner afterwards, and he Sergio was shocked that Arnold beat him because he had beaten him the year before. So then Sergio said, I can't believe you beat me, Arnold. And Arnold said, Sergio, if you would have been just a little bigger, I wouldn't be able to touch you. So then Sergio goes home to Chicago and eats for the next 2 weeks and gets bigger, but he gets fatter. And then Arnold beats him again. And
Right. Which contest was the one, the famous thing, scene where Arnold, where they tell him to file off?
And, that was that one too. He told Sergio to go off. Yeah.
Oh, that was hilarious. Yeah. Okay, guys, file off, because Sergio was posing him and Arnold the pose down, and Arnold acts like he's leaving. Sergio walks all the way off.
Did you ever see the video of that, Jerry?
I think I did. Yeah.
Yeah. I just did a. I have these little bodybuilding history videos on my website. So if anybody wants to check them out, they're on my YouTube channel. Yeah. But I just did one about a month ago about the 1970 Olympia, and I've got the it's terrible footage. I mean, it's very dark. It's hard to see, but you could see they're on stage posing, and then supposedly Arnold said it when his back was to the audience.
Right.
He turned to Sergio and said, "I'm tired. Let's get out of here." And then Sergio just turns around and walks off stage. And then Arnold goes, "What are you doing? Come back here." You know, he makes a big deal of it. You know, and he's like, goes to the audience. He's like, "I don't know what he's doing." You know?
In other words, it makes it look like Sergio was afraid to pose next
year. Yeah, yeah. He left. Yeah. He abandoned the stage. Yeah.
One of Arnold's psych out techniques.
Well, the next year was controversial because that was in 1971. That was the year that the first year that it was held outside the United States.
Right.
And they held it in Paris, France. Serge Nubre was the promoter.
Right.
And I don't believe Serge was competing yet in the IFBB, but he was involved with the IFBB. He was like one of their executives. I think he was maybe the vice president. And they let him promote the Mr. Olympia and the Mr. Universe in Paris. And it was the week after the NABBA Mr. Universe that Bill Pearl won. Right. And Sergio went over and competed. And that's when Joe Weider or Ben Weider said that if you're in the IFBB and you're competing as a professional, you cannot compete in any other organizations. So that's why they forbid Arnold from going over to London to compete against Bill Pearl. Yeah. And Sergio did go over to London and competed, and he actually lost to Bill Pearl. And then he went over a week later to Paris to compete in the Mr. Olympia. And they told him, they said, "You can't compete, Sergio, because you guest post." So then that was the one that Arnold won unopposed, because Franco also showed up, and they banned Franco for some reason for a contest that he was in the year before. So Arnold ended up being the only guy in the contest because they banned. But it wasn't like Sergio where they were afraid to show up. Arnold did have competition. They just wouldn't allow those guys to compete.
Which was really ridiculous.
It was, yeah.
I mean, these are professionals. They should be allowed to compete in any contest they want.
And when you look back at the history of bodybuilding, I mean, wouldn't we have loved to have seen another Arnold Sergio pose down? I mean, yeah, come on. We only saw him pose down, like, I think four times.
No, it was just very
great to see him again, you know?
Just a petty thing on the part of the IAPB.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
I mean, they have, over the years, shown that they're not really, you know, the idea that they're trying to really promote bodybuilding and you know, increase its popularity, it doesn't jive with their record. I mean, you know, I mean, they, like, that example of not letting professionals compete, because they competed in another federation, which was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and plus, later on, I think I told you the story, there was a Chicago pro show where they didn't sell enough tickets. And the guy, promoter, had already paid the IFBB a sanction fee. I don't remember what it was, but it was pretty considerable. And so this guy, the promoter, appealed to Ben Weider. He said, for help. He says, "Could you, you know, help us, you know, put on the show? We don't have enough money." And Ben Weider turned him down flat.
Yeah.
And I learned of this because I ran into some of the guys who were supposed to compete, Boric, all these other guys, and they were furious about it because they literally had the rug pulled out at the last minute.
Yeah.
They were all set to compete. And, you know, and I never forgot that. I said, what a petty thing. They could take the money from the promoters, but they won't give anything back at all. Horrible.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I'll say this publicly now. I don't care. I'm, you know, Joe Weider's gone. I'm not aligned with any magazine. I'll say it like it is. The IFBB treated the bodybuilder like crap.
Yeah.
It's horrible, horrible.
I mean, things are so much different now. It's more organized, you know, I mean, stuff. But back then, you could see they would put judges in, or, you know, I mean, it was still crazy. It was like the Wild, Wild West. But now, of course, it's much, much more organized, and that would never happen. But
yeah,
it was crazy.
Well, today, I mean, if they pulled that stuff today, there'd be an uproar.
Yeah, well, now, like you said, we have social media now, so everybody's going to be aware of it, and everybody has their opinion, you know, where, like you said, back then, if you had a real controversial contest, I mean, aside from writing a letter to the magazine, how could you voice your opinion, you know?
That's right.
Yeah. True. So 72, the next year, was also held outside the United States. This was in Essen, Germany, and that was the one you mentioned where Sergio was really in incredible condition. So Sergio did compete. This was the last time, actually, that Sergio and Arnold competed against each other. And Arnold beat him, and it was another really it was probably the most controversial Mr. Olympia up to that point, you know, from when it started in 65.
Yeah.
Sure. Because a lot of people thought Sergio should have won. You know, also, Jerry, they had no judges from the United States in that contest.
Is that right?
Yeah. They were all from, like, France and Germany.
If I remember correctly, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but Arnold's friend, the guy who ran the German version of Muscle and Fitness, I can't remember his name.
Albert Busek?
Busek. Yeah. Was he either the promoter? He had something to do with that.
I think he was the promoter. Yeah, I've seen pictures of him.
I mean, this is Arnold's closest friends, and he was kind of a, what is it called? I mean, he promoted Arnold from the time he was a teenager.
I mean,
there was rumors that he kind of handpicked the judges to ensure that Arnold would win that contest. And you look at the photos of how it turned out, there's credibility to that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even if you don't know a lot about bodybuilding, when you compare, I mean, not that Arnold looked bad, he looked great, but it just happens to be that year, Sergio was at the peak best condition ever.
Yeah.
And Sergio at that condition was almost just about unbeatable. I mean, he should have won. And, you know, you could see that something was rotten there. You know what I mean? And if Busek handpicked the judges, ensure Arnold win, well, that explains everything right there.
Yeah.
I don't have any evidence to prove this, but the fact that you say there's no American judges, it makes you wonder about that, you know?
Yeah. I saw the video, Wayne Gallish from GMV Productions, if anybody's interested in watching the actual video, he sells it. He sells it as a download, too, so you can go to gmv.com or .au because he's in Australia. But he has, and it does look actually a lot closer when you see the video. When you see Arnold's posing routine, Arnold looks really good. But Arnold admitted that he was off. He said he was a couple pounds off.
Ah, okay.
But I did read an article in Muscle Builder after the show, and Arnold said, he said, if I would have been a judge, I would have picked Sergio.
Ah, that's interesting. I didn't know that. That's really, well, there you go.
But he said the reason why he won was he said it was European judges, and the Europeans like a bigger guy. And he said, I'm bigger than Sergio because I'm taller and just way more. And he said, so I can understand why I won, because they look for a certain type. But he goes, I wasn't at my best. I was a couple pounds off. And he goes, if I would have been a judge, I would have picked Sergio.
You know, that kind of makes sense. I can understand that. I mean, but if you judge on the purely on the physique, it still should have been Sergio, as Arnold himself pointed out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if our Sergio was off that year, well, then there'd be no discussion, but Sergio just happened to be, I don't think he ever peaked that way before or after that contest.
And what's a shame about that, Joe, is that Sergio was so mad. You know, he not only lost the title to Arnold, but then he tried to come back a couple times, 70, 71, they wouldn't allow him to compete. And then 72, he shows up in great shape, and they still don't let him win. So I think after that, he said, I'm done. And he never went to the IFBB again until, you know, way back in 1984, you know.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, he Sergio felt that, you know, they had the deck stacked against him. He had a lot of bitterness.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at this record that you just described, you can understand why. I mean, Sergio, I never heard him say that, but from what I was told, he thinks he thought there might have been a racial thing involved there too, because he was black. You know what I mean? And that's a possibility. I know that he showed a lot of hostility to me when I approached him at the years later, you know, to try and do it. Remember, I told you the story when he had a booth at one of the Mr. Olympia.
Oh yeah, years later, yeah.
And he told me when I mentioned that I was covering, you know, from Muscle and Fitness, Joe Weider, he told me, that's when he said, get away from me. I don't want to talk to you, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I really didn't take it personally, because I already knew that Sergio was angry about the way he was treated. you know, but
I don't think it was as much of a racial thing. I think it was more that Weider was using Arnold to promote Weider magazine and Weider supplements. And that was his poster boy, I guess, you know. So I don't think it was the fact that, well, I mean, maybe, I don't know if Weider thought, well, because Arnold's white, Sergio's black, Arnold can do it better. I just think Arnold was a better spokesman.
Right.
So I could see him, I mean, I don't know if that was the real reason, but I could see, you know, Weider protecting Arnold for that, you know.
I can add a little to that. Something I think, I don't think I told you this before. One day I was sitting up in the office with Joe. And, you know, when I used to go up there, he used to take me in the photo editing room and have me look at different covers for Muscle. Yeah. Which one do you think looks best? And he did this all the time. And one time that he did that, I turned to him and I said, Joe, I said, let me ask you a question. Why do you very rarely have black guys on the cover of Muscle and Fit? I mean, you have constant photos of Arnold and all these other guys, Larry Scott. I said, you've hardly had any covers of Sergio and all these guys. And I think this is when Lee Haney was winning.
Okay.
And I said, you know, here's Lee Haney. He had already won the Olympia couple. And there wasn't really that many covers. He was on Flex a couple of.
But not on Muscle Fitness, yeah.
Not on Muscle Fitness. And I said, what's the deal there, Joe? You know, and he says it's not a racial thing. I'm not prejudiced against black people. He says, but I'm telling you, every time we put a black guy on the cover of Muscle and Fitness, the sales drop to nothing.
Wow.
Every time. He says this goes back years, way back to Leroy Corbett days in the 50s. Every time we have a black guy on the cover, I said, Joe, I remember what I said. That doesn't make sense. I said, look at Sports Illustrated. I said, they constantly have black guys on the cover. At that time, Michael Jordan was on the cover like 15 times a year.
Right.
I said, it doesn't hurt their sales. I said, something's missing here.
Yeah.
He said, I can't explain it. This is all I can tell you is that this is what happens.
Hmm.
That's what he told me. I remember the exact conversation.
Wow.
Yeah.
I heard that story too. I heard
that before too.
Let's go to the next year. Now, the next year was 73, so this was in New York. So they finally brought it back to New York. I'm not sure if it was at the Brooklyn Academy. I can't remember. Yeah. But it was in New York in 73, and this was the year that Charles Gaines and George Butler photographed it for the book Pumping Iron. So that was a pretty significant year. There was only three guys in it that year. It was Arnold, Franco, and Serge Nubre.
Yeah.
And so I guess because of the – but it was also, I think, the start of Arnold's peak, which was 73 and 74, because he was really, really improved. And maybe it was because of the controversy of 72, where, you know, he beat Sergio, and a lot of people said he wasn't his best. And I think Arnold knew he wasn't his best. Yeah. So I think he really turned it up, and he really came back in 73 better than ever, because maybe he was thinking Sergio was going to come back again looking like he did in 72, you know.
It makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably exactly what happened. He did look fantastic in 73.
And you know what's amazing too, Jerry, is that's the year he broke his knee and you know, on that posing platform. So I guess that happened in 72, right after the Olympia. I think he stayed in Europe, and I think he was guest posing out there. And remember how they used to always have the little posing platform that they would stand on, which is, now when you think about it today, it kind of seems ridiculous why they had to stand on this little platform. And they didn't have one at one of the things. And so Arnold said, I'll build one myself. And so he tried to put one together, and he must not have did a good job, because while he was posing, the thing broke and he fell and he broke his knee and he tore the ligaments in his knee. And they had to do surgery on it when he got back home. And, you know, I'm sure the surgeries back then weren't as good as they are now. And he had to recover. But he recovered and he built his legs better than ever. Because I thought in 73 and 74, his legs were at their all-time best.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
You know, there's been rumors over the years that the knee thing, because I remember seeing Arnold on crutches with a cast on his leg.
Yeah, me too.
And the rumors over the years were that the broken leg was a cover-up for Arnold having a calf implant operation.
Oh, okay.
That's been a persistent rumor. And I immediately dismissed it.
I think his calves were bigger before that year.
I dismissed it, but
yeah.
I never really did a comparison of his calves before and after that operation. So all I know is that Arnold sure as hell put a lot of size on his calves from the time he was in the NABBA universe
Yeah.
MVP. I mean, the Cavs look like they got 6 inches bigger.
I remember they were huge in 71. So
Yeah. I to this day, I really don't know. I doubt that he had calf. But I wrote an article in my Applied Metabolics. I was talking about that, and I looked up the history of calf implants, and the calf implants, they had them at the time that Arnold, Cervoli, Kibbs, calves got bigger, but they were very crude. They were actually designed for equestrian women who wanted to have bigger calves when they rode the horses. I know this sounds crazy. That's who they were originally designed for.
Oh, really? Wow, that's weird.
Yeah, they weren't designed for bodybuilders. And if you put these type of very crude implants in a bodybuilder, it would look very weird. It looked like he would have a tumor in his legs or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So that makes me believe that Arnold did not have that, because that's when they said he had the calf implants. But again, if he had them, it would have been very noticeable. Very
look noticeable. At the implants Foligno got 20 years later in the 90s. I mean, yeah, that's ridiculous, you know.
Yeah, those were definite implants for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, I heard that Arnold had I heard he went to Mexico and had silicone injections.
That's what they were using.
Yeah.
That's
what they were using for implants?
Well, that was the second original implant, was direct silicone.
Okay.
The first one, they were using a different type of material. I don't remember. It was something I never heard of, that they were like sticking in the legs to puff up the calves. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then the second type of calf implant was silicone injections. So it's very possible. It's very possible.
If you look at Arnold's calves, it's not really like the whole calf. It's more the middle part.
Right.
Soleus, you know where the soleus is?
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess if he got some kind of injection in there, because that's what made his calves look freaky.
Right.
And I've seen a comparison picture when he was in the 67 NABBA Universe when he won it the first time when he was 20, and his calves were much smaller. And then a comparison to like 1973 when they were much bigger, it's still the same shape. The calf shape is still the same, but it was just much more magnified, much bigger, you know.
Well, another thing that makes me wonder is that in some cases when you have the implants put in, you know that famous diamond shape of the calf when the guys turn to the – they have the extreme definition where you can see the gastrocnemius. That's the medical name of the calf. You can see it in broad relief like it's a diamond thing.
A diamond, yeah.
When you have the calf implants, very often you don't get the – you get a bigger, thicker-looking calf, but you don't get that diamond look when you turn to the back.
Yeah.
I remember seeing Arnold with the diamond calf when he did back shot. Did you? You know, his calves look big from the back, but he didn't have that extreme, you know, diamond look of the gastric.
From the front, you mean?
You know, from the back.
From the back, okay. Yeah.
Like, you know, when he kind of steps on his toe, we could clearly see the gastric muscle. I don't remember ever seeing
that. I remember they were just freaky because they had that big part in the middle.
Yeah. No,
they looked really freaky.
You know, they were very wide and thick. You're right. In other words, but he didn't have the definition you'd expect, you know, and that's the only thing that makes me wonder, you know, because that.
You could see the fibers moving. Like, remember in the movie Twins, they had a close-up of his calves, and that was when he was 40 years old. This is 1988.
Right. Yeah.
And he walked up, and I think he went up on his toes, and they were just, you know, the fibers and everything was splitting. I mean, they didn't look like implants at all. They looked like real muscle.
Right. Plus, if Arnold did have any kind of implant, you know, if you see him today, I know he's an older man, but I mean, he has no calves at all now.
Smaller, yeah.
I mean, no, there's literally nothing there. He has no development. I'm not trying to put Arnold down.
Yeah.
I mean, 77 years. I don't have calves either, so I'm not putting the man down. What I'm saying is that I would think that if they were implants, unless he had I've known women over the years, including a very famous female bodybuilder. I don't want to embarrass her by mentioning her, but she had she started out with a very flat chest, and she had implants put in. Every you do it with the female implants, you have this fascia covering the pectoral, and when you put in implants, it kind of stretches the flat fascia, so you could put in bigger and bigger implants if you desire. And she had like 4 implant jobs done. Her last implants were like Dolly Parton, like they were gigantic. And I guess it was very uncomfortable. She had the implants removed and went back to more normal-looking breasts. Now, if Arnold had implants, he must have had them removed because, I mean, why? How else to explain his calves today? There's nothing there.
Well, I think Lou had his removed, too.
Yeah, Lou had his removed, too. I mean, so, you know, it makes me wonder. I mean, because I would think that if he had any kind of, unless, and see, this I'm not sure of, unless maybe the type of implant he had, I don't think this is true, but it might be, maybe it's gradually broken down over the years. I don't know. All I know is that Arnold today certainly looks like he never had implants.
Well, when you said when after Arnold retired and he would still go to the gym or in the off season, you said in the off season he would train him really hard, right? He still trained his calves hard.
That's the one thing he trained hard all year. He would do like a nothing workout. I mean, like 5-10 sets for any other muscle. The calves, he'd do a full calf workout.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd do like three exercises. He'd do like 15, 20 sets again all year round. Always trained calves hard.
See, so if he was just using an injection, he had no reason to do that, right?
No reason to do that. That's another thing that makes me think that he didn't have the calf implants.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like you say, why would he need to train his calves off?
I used to see Rich Piana because he trained in Tampa for a while before he died. And whenever I saw him in the gym training his arms, he'd be doing like 30-pound dumbbell curls because it wasn't real muscle. You know, it was just those injections he was using.
Yeah. See, now Rich had, you know, Rich Piana, when his arms were hanging, they were just humongous.
Humongous, yeah.
I mean, some guys claim 24-inch arms, but I never believed them.
Yeah.
I just looked at, well, who was it I looked up? I looked up a bodybuilder. It was, what's his name? Lavrone, Kevin.
Yeah.
If you look up his biography on, I think it's in Wikipedia, it has his measurements as a bodybuilder. And it says that he had 24-inch arms and a 29-inch waist. Now, don't get me wrong. I admired Kevin. I knew him. I did a lot of stories on him. Great guy. I don't think he ever had 24-inch arms. And I don't think he ever had a 29-inch waist.
No, no.
So, you know, what can I say?
Wikipedia. You know.
Wikipedia, you know. Anybody could write anything on Wikipedia.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I mean, I could go on there, write a bio myself where it said Jerry won the Mr. Olympia 9 times, but was cheated out of the cheated. He was cheated out of the contest
because
he was with the IFBB. Didn't like. I mean, you can write anything.
Yeah.
It's not, you know.
Okay, let's go over the last couple of years. Arnold won, so that was 74. Was the next year that was in New York again?
Yeah.
This time they held it at the Madison Square Garden in the Felt Forum. Which is actually next to, but it's part of the Madison Square Garden. And that was a good show because that was the first year, this was notable, where they had the under 200, over 200-pound class. That was the first time they did that because before it was just obviously one class. So they did that actually from 74 till 80, and then 80 they stopped it. And we'll talk about 80 in a second. But so I guess Franco was the one who really wanted that because he felt like he could never beat Arnold. So this way, they had the first under 200-pound class. It was him and Frank Zane, and he did beat Frank Zane, so he did win. And then Arnold beat Lou Ferrigno, and then Arnold won the overall. So that was recognized as Arnold's greatest year, was 74.
Right. Well, you know, we did the deal where Sean Ray was on, and I brought up that news conference one year. I can't remember what year. It was much later. It was 90s.
Yeah.
They didn't have the under 212 class back then.
Right.
And Lee LeBron and Sean were among the top competitors. But, you know, they were in fantastic, incredible shape, both of them.
Oh, yeah.
But they were competing against these gargantuan guys. And I knew that everyone knew they didn't really have a chance.
Yeah.
So I was in, you know, they had this press conference and I asked Sean, I said, Sean, would you like to have them bring back the short class or maybe an under 200 or 212 or something like that? And he says, no, there should only be one Mr. Olympia. And so when we did that show, you might remember, I asked him again, do you still feel that way? He said, yes. He says, I think there should only be one Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
You know? But I disagree with that. You know, on the other hand, you got guys like Hottie Chopin and Derek Lunsford, who started at us 212,
right?
And did win the overall Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
You know, because the guys are so much bigger now
that
some of the guys with exceptional genetics, like Derek and Hottie, they can get big enough, not height wise, but muscular mass, where they can jump in the open Olympia, or Brandon Curry's another one, and beat much guys that are much taller than them.
Yeah.
You know, because they have such incredible mass combined with muscle definition and shape, you know? So You know, I mean, I still think there should be a 212, though, because these guys are exceptions to the rule. Most of the other guys, as great as they are, you know, they're not going to beat the huge guys because, you know, you have a super superlative short guy, ripped, shredded, you know, then you have a big guy, ripped, shredded, but bigger. The short guy's never going to win. Come on, let's face it. It's not going to happen.
Right. You know? Although they are now. They are now.
Yeah, well, like I say, there's exceptions. Yeah. Adi and Derek, but if you look at the other guys that say are still competing at 212, I think most of them could not, would not, unless they'd have to do the same thing Hadi and Derek did, put on like 30 pounds of muscle to compete in the Open Olympia. Otherwise, they don't have a chance.
Yeah. The next year was the big one, too, because that was 75. So now this was held outside the United States again. This was Pretoria, South Africa. And of course, that's famous because that's where they filmed the movie Pumping Iron.
Right.
And so everybody remembers that contest.
Yeah,
that was the biggest Mr. Olympia they ever had up to that point because they had, I believe they had like six guys in the under 200 pound class.
Yeah.
They had Franco, Ed Corney, Albert Beckles, Frank Zane, that Giuseppe Dion, I think, was in it, and Bill Grant. So they had six guys, and then they had three guys in the over 200, which was Serge Nubre, Arnold, and Ferrigno. So there was nine guys. So that was definitely the record. For the most people in the Mr. Olympia up to that point.
Yeah. Do you believe this story, John, that Arnold had planned to retire, but, you know, the Butler and Gaines approached him because they wanted to make the Pumping Iron movie?
Yeah.
And they talked him into competing when he really wasn't. He was already kind of segueing into the movies.
Right.
And he really didn't want to compete, but, you know, for the sake of the film,
he
got in shape. Do you believe that story?
Yeah, but I also heard that they paid him 50 grand to do
it. Yeah, I heard it could be as much as 100 grand.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so, 50 grand in 1975, that was a lot of money.
Yeah, well, yeah, today it's what it would be about 300 grand.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so.
Especially when you consider none of the other guys in the movie got paid anything.
Nothing. Yeah. Oh, that, you know, I told you the story that when they came out, right? You know, how the guys in goal, Frank Zane knew there was something wrong right from the start. I mean, you know,
that's why he really didn't want to be in the movie.
He didn't want to have anything to do with it because he met with Butler and Gaines and they told him to wait. And he saw right off the bat, he initially was going to be in it.
Yeah.
But when he saw the way the film was, where it was plotted out, they had plotted out certain scenes. He realized that the whole focus was going to be on Arnold.
Yeah.
And Zane bowed out. He didn't want to. And this is before.
He told George Butler at one point, he goes, why don't you just call it Pumping Arnold?
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, and this is before it came out that Arnold was the only one being paid good bucks. The other guys, Arnold was given the story that, you know, the filmmakers, they don't have much money, and this
Let's
is going to
do it for the sport,
for the sport, and it's going to help you guys, because if this thing catches on, you guys are all going to be famous and make a lot of money. And I remember when Robbie found out about it, he was furious.
Yeah.
So the guys were really pissed about that, because Arnold was supposed to be their friend.
He was
in the gym with them. I mean, it showed you that Arnold has a cutthroat side to him.
Oh, yeah.
He only cares about Arnold.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's mellowed out over the years. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to take anything away from Arnold.
Yeah.
I like Arnold personally, you know what I mean? But back then, Arnold was only interested in Arnold.
Let's put it that way. Got to look out for number one.
Number one, exactly. Right.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks again to our good friend Jerry Branham for joining us on the podcast. And again, Jerry's website is appliedmetabolics.com. So if you want to show your support for Jerry, I know he's a big supporter of the show and he's always one of our favorite guests on the podcast. So if you want to show your support of Jerry and learn a little bit more about training and nutrition knowledge, go to appliedmetabolics.com and you can sign up for his monthly newsletter. And it's only $10 a month, so it's very cheap. You can support Jerry there. And also thank you to our Patreon donors who continue to support the show. I couldn't do the show without you guys. If, like I said, if you're interested in becoming a Patreon sponsor of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, you can go to the official website, which is bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and you'll see the link in the upper right-hand corner, or just check out the link below. So we will be back next week with another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where me and Jerry will continue our talk about the history of the Mr. Olympia. We'll talk about the Columbus years which went from 1976 to 1979. That's when Arnold and Jim Lorimer were promoting it. And then we'll talk about what I call the controversial years era, which was 1980 and 1981. So we'll cover both of those next time on part two of our interview with Jerry Branum. All right, guys, until then, stay safe, train hard, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.